That night in the mid-watch, when the old man stepped forth from the scuttle in which he leaned and went to his pivot-hole, he suddenly thrust out his face fiercely, snuffing up the sea air as a sagacious ship's dog will in drawing nigh to some barbarous isle. He declared that a whale must be near. Soon that peculiar odor, sometimes to a great distance given forth by the living sperm whale, was palpable to all the watch. Nor was any mariner surprised when, after inspecting the compass and then the dog vane, and then ascertaining the precise bearing of the odor as nearly as possible, Ahab rapidly ordered the ship's course to be slightly altered and the sail to be shortened. The acute policy dictating these movements was sufficiently vindicated at daybreak by the sight of a long sleek on the sea, directly and lengthwise ahead, smooth as oil, and resembling in the pleated watery wrinkles bordering it the polished metallic-like marks of some swift tide rip at the mouth of a deep, rapid stream.
"Man the mastheads! Call all hands!"
Thundering with the butts of three clubbed handspikes on the forecastle deck, Daggoo roused the sleepers with such judgment claps that they seemed to exhale from the scuttle, so instantaneously did they appear with their clothes in their hands.
"What do you see?"
cried Ahab, flattening his face to the sky.
"Nothing, nothing, sir,"
was the sound hailing down in reply.
"T'gallant sails, stunsails, alow and aloft, and on both sides."
All sail being set, he now cast loose the lifeline reserved for swaying him to the main royal masthead, and in a few moments they were hoisting him thither, when, while but two-thirds of the way aloft, and while peering ahead through the horizontal vacancy between the main topsail and the top-gallantsail, he raised a gull-like cry in the air.
"There she blows! There she blows! A hump like snow hill! It is Moby Dick!"
Fired by the cry, which seemed simultaneously taken up by the three lookouts, the men on deck rushed to the rigging to behold the famous whale they had so long been pursuing. Ahab had now gained his final perch, some feet above the other lookout, Tashtego standing just beneath him on the cap of the top gallant mast, so that the Indian's head was almost on a level with Ahab's heel. From this height, the whale was now seen some mile or so ahead, at every roll of the sea revealing his high, sparkling hump and regularly jetting his silent spout into the air. To the credulous mariners it seemed the same silent spout they had so long ago beheld in the moonlit Atlantic and Indian Oceans.
"And did none of you see it before?"
cried Ahab, hailing the perched men all around him.
"I saw him almost the same instant, sir, the Captain Ahab did, and I cried out," said Tashtego. "Not the same instant, not the same. No, the doubloon is mine. Fate reserved the doubloon for me. I only. None of ye could have raised the white whale first. There she blows! There she blows! There she blows! There again! There! There!"
he cried in long-drawn, lingering, methodic tones attuned to the gradual prolongings of the whale's visible jets. Soon all the boats but Starbuck's were dropped, all the boat sails set, all the paddles plying, with rippling swiftness shooting to leeward, and Ahab heading the onset. A pale death glimmer lit up Fadulla's sunken eyes. A hideous motion gnawed his mouth. Like noiseless nautilus shells, their light prows sped through the sea, but only slowly they neared the foe. As they neared him, the ocean grew still more smooth, seemed drawing a carpet over its waves, seemed a noon meadow so serenely it spread. At length, the breathless hunter came so nigh his seemingly unsuspecting prey that his entire dazzling hump was distinctly visible, sliding along the sea as if an isolated thing and continually set in a revolving ring of finest, fleecy, greenish foam. He saw the vast, involved wrinkles of the slightly projecting head beyond. Before it, far out on the soft, Turkish-rugged waters, went the glistening white shadow from his broad, milky forehead, a musical rippling playfully accompanying the shade, and behind the blue waters interchangeably flowed over into the moving valley of his steady wake, and on either side bright bubbles arose and danced by his side. but these were broken again by the light toes of hundreds of gay fowls softly feathering the sea, alternate with their fitful flight, and like to some flagstaff rising from the painted hull of an argosy, the tall but shattered pole of a recent lance projected from the white whale's back, and at intervals one of the cloud of soft-toed fowls hovering, and to and fro skimming like a canopy over the fish, silently perched and rocked on this pole, the long tail feathers streaming like pennons. And thus, through the serene tranquillities of the tropical sea, among waves whose hand-clappings were suspended by exceeding rapture, Moby Dick moved on, still withholding from sight the full terrors of his submerged trunk, entirely hiding the wrenched hideousness of his jaw.